Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, your home for June Sploitation. My name is Patrick Bromley, Sploitation, and I'm joined tonight for a discussion of VHS 2 by J.B. Sploitation.
I'm awake.
J.B. Sploitation. J.Bone Sploitation. Remember, you can always find our website at fthismovie.net. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at FThisMovie, email us at FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com, and you can always find us in the iTunes store by searching FThisMovie, and while you're there, if you like the show, go ahead and leave us a positive star rating or a positive review. Many of you have done this so far, and we really, really appreciate you taking the time to do that. It helps raise the visibility of our show, and darn it, it makes us feel good.
We do. You're sitting there thinking that Patrick is paying lip service to it or something, but he's not. He's really sincere, because I'm sitting here, and I can see him, and you can't. And let me tell you, there's sincerity plastered all over his puss.
That's lipstick, sir! Lipstick! We're going to be talking about VHS 2, the new horror anthology movie that is a sequel to last October's VHS. This may be the fastest turnaround from an original to a sequel since Break-In and Break-In 2 came out in the same year.
There was such a demand for a sequel to VHS. I mean, I don't know if any of you remember, even though you should, it was a year ago, that it broke box office records. The merchandising alone, I couldn't walk down the street without seeing a VHS t-shirt. There was a whole selection of bobbleheads that you could get at mobile gas stations. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was something.
Mm-hmm. My favorite was...
he said, lying.
Was Lesbian Murderer. so if you haven't heard our podcast on VHS, you may want to go ahead and listen to it. I believe the original movie is also available for streaming on Netflix. My guess is we're going to be referencing the last movie, so if you want a better frame of reference, listen to that. Also, we'll try and be pretty spoiler-free for a little while, and then eventually we'll spoil things. The movie is available on demand now. It's getting a limited release, I want to say in July. But let me go back real quick, because I just mentioned we're going to talk spoiler-free.
In July, it plays at least one midnight show at the Music Box.
That's kind of what they did with the first movie. I mentioned talking spoiler-free and then getting into spoilers, which we do for those of you who want to sort of hear whether or not we liked a movie without knowing all of the specific details. But let me bring up this email that we got to fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. This comes from Jay Pinkerton, a video game writer living in the Pacific Northwest. He says some very nice things about our podcast, which is super nice. And then he goes on to say, I won't read it because it will seem boastful. And then he goes on to say, one question. Have you guys ever run a poll or something actually asking your listeners if the non-spoiler part of the show is appreciated or necessary? Sometimes it feels like you put the brakes on an interesting conversation to talk around something. I wonder if you're doing all this extra work for no one. You guys should weigh in on this, maybe in the comments. Do you like the part where we talk no spoilers? Do you even listen to that part? JB, what is your opinion on this?
I'm of a divided mind. Okay. First of all, I get the feeling reading other comments on other podcasts that there are people who listen to it up until spoilers,
yeah,
and then stop.
Right.
And then eventually they see it, and then they listen to the rest of the podcast.
Which is the intent.
So that's half my brain. If I had my druthers,
yes,
I would eliminate the entire thing, and I think this...
The entire podcast? You want to get rid of it. You don't want...
Could we?
You don't want to do this anymore? All right, folks. It's been a good run. Thank you.
No, let's keep doing it.
All right.
At least for one more minute. That I come from a place called Italy. No, I come from a place where when I was young, you couldn't see movies. I've talked about this endlessly. And so by nature, everything would be spoiled for you. And I know Adam wrote a column about this lately. I do not go to movies to see what happens.
Sure.
I am no longer interested in narrative. I really am not at all. If someone were to let slip with something and it's a big twist, even if it's a big twist, that wouldn't keep me from going. However, I think our listeners should weigh in, and yeah. I'm perfectly willing to go with what they want. I would argue we should not do it anymore.
I agree with what Jay Pinkerton says, that sometimes it does halt an interesting conversation. My feeling is that we'll just have that interesting conversation maybe 15 minutes later when we're in the spoiler section. I am, I think, a little bit more like you in that I would much rather just go ahead and spoil things. And when we, you know, we really only do the non-spoiler part for new releases, which not all of our podcasts are. You know, last week we did A Hard Day's Night. We didn't feel the need to talk spoiler-free. So a lot of our older movies, we go ahead and just talk spoilers the whole time. I just feel like we're living in a culture now that's incredibly spoiler-phobic, and I want to be at least somewhat sensitive to that.
And there was a brilliant sketch about this on Portlandia, I think this season.
Yeah.
And what it made me remember, because again, I'm the official old man of this movie, is there was a time when everyone saw everything at the same time.
Yeah.
And you couldn't go back and see it again. And that led to something that I don't think we appreciated very much, that the next day you could talk about things.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish we could still do that.
Nope.
Because Armisen and Brownstein hit it on the head, though. That is the melee of the 21st century in terms of entertainment.
It's come up a lot in the last week if you are a viewer of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
This very significant thing happened, and then no one could talk about it because some people hadn't had a chance to see it yet, even though, again, the episode had aired and it was published in a book several years ago.
Game of Thrones and Blackhawks games, I put in the same category.
Stay off of Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. I watch neither. But, oh my God, Facebook lights up like a pinball machine. Oh, apparently the Blackhawks are playing tonight.
Anyway, everybody, please weigh in on the comments, or if you want to send us an email to fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
That would be terrific.
If you could, in your comments, don't spoil what your opinion is on this subject.
Tell us.
put a spoiler warning about how you feel. Anyway, before we talk about VHS 2, J-Bones... I know we just did a show less than a week ago, but I feel confident. Have you seen anything good lately?
I am prolific, and I intend to start playing June's Playtation, because as you know, and anyone with a calendar knows, school's out for summer, baby, and now I can finally have some fun. So I've seen some movies, and I am going to start June's Playtation, albeit a week late. I have seen The Purge, which I was so curious about because all of my students were in a frenzy. I would say even with Man of Steel that Purge was the film that my students were most looking forward to.
This terrifies me.
And it should. Because I went Thursday night, I think, to the first preview screening that bullshit. Oh, right. It's a sneak. Well, no, it's not. You're just showing it 2 hours early. And truly scary crowd. Now, part of that is I don't like crowds.
Right.
So by definition, any crowd is scary. But this crowd was kind of frightening before the movie started and really frightening during the movie. I never saw it, but I think you had a similar experience with Gran Torino.
Oh, yeah.
Where?
Oh, you're so lucky to have never seen Gran Torino. Clint Eastwood says racist things through the whole movie, and the audience laughed every time. And it's like, no. We're supposed to object to what he's saying, not love him.
So the final irony is that the film fails, I believe, as satire. And although it's an enjoyable entertainment, and it's very efficient, and it gets the job done, and it certainly gave these people what they came to see. I mean, people were applauding and cheering certain things that go on. Besides being an efficient little haunted house movie, I thought it was incredibly lazy. I thought, and I think I shared this with you yesterday, if they had just gone the extra mile, if they had done another revision of the script, if they had hired a director who knew what he was doing, it's really poorly directed. I mean, there's some things, it's film school 101, and you shouldn't have a problem doing this. The film wants to be trenchant satire, and the film wants to say something about something, but it's so club-footed and so crude that it winds up either saying nothing or you sit there and think, I don't think they could have possibly meant this.
Right.
Interesting ideas keep bubbling up about every 20 minutes.
Okay.
It owes a lot to Night of the Living Dead. I was really surprised. Spoiler alert, it's like, oh, so you guys like that movie too, huh?
Okay.
On another note, I also went to the Music Box, the happiest place on earth, and saw a new documentary about Ricky Jay. You might be familiar with him if you like the films of David Mamet. I think he's in each one. He's the narrator of Magnolia, among other things. He's Captain Amazing's agent in
Mystery Men.
Yeah. And he's a magician and something of a historian of magicians. And I've seen him live, and I've never seen a better live performer. But it's a new documentary. It's by Kino Lorber. It's called Deceptive Practice, The Magic and Mentors of Ricky Jay. I might be screwing up the title a little bit. It's well worth your time, because like most great documentaries, it sort of gives you the raw material to meditate on the subject at some length. So there's something going on the screen, but I always think this about Errol Morris's films, that he's giving us, that the film itself is a drug that encourages us to go off on our own separate meditation. So driving home with my wife, I thought the film had a lot to say about teaching, the nature of teaching, because he talks about his mentors and the way in which he learned his craft. And Jan thought it was a really wonderful metaphor for language, the power of language and the power of poetry.
Interestingly enough, you are a teacher and she is a writer.
Right. So maybe it exists as a Rorschach inkblot test, but I really would recommend it to you. I'm guessing within weeks it'll be on pay-per-view or on Little Shiny Disc or on Netflix. It's very much worth your time. It's really good. And there's a lot of talking heads and a lot of talkity-talkity talk, but that's offset by a lot of magic. The filmmakers were smart enough to know about every 10 minutes you got to give them a trick to sort of keep them occupied. But I was really glad that I saw it.
Would you say it's the best magic movie to come out this year? After The Incredible Burt Wonderstone and Now You See Me?
Well, I'm at a disadvantage because...
No, you're not.
There's so little out this week because everyone's girding their loins for Man of Steel that I might wind up seeing Now You See It or Now You See
Me.
Yes, Patrick, it is the best magic movie of all the magic
movies. Do people in masks try to kill Ricky Jay? Because that is a common theme for movies these days. There's people in masks, and they want to break into your house and kill you.
No, but to show you how special this movie is, and I don't think this is a spoiler, Ricky Jay studied under a magician who studied under Max Mellini, who's this legend. And if you're in the magic community, you know how influential Max Mellini is. Because Max Mellini would show up at the house of rich people, and he would be hired to entertain, and he would bring nothing with him. He would ask for a napkin and a bowl, and talk about not being able to set up your trick in advance. And I guess this guy was amazing, and Ricky Jay recounts one of his most amazing tricks. And at one point in the documentary, they're talking about the BBC doing a documentary about Ricky Jay, and Ricky Jay was being cantankerous, and he and the director didn't get along, and the director needed like this big set piece trick because he had this preconceived notion of what the documentary was going to be, and he wanted the entire thing to revolve around this trick, and Ricky Jay didn't want to do it, then felt like a performing dog, and didn't want the documentary, blah, 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 blah. The producer of the BBC show, not the director, he takes her out to a restaurant one day. And they got stuck in traffic, so they were 2 hours late to the restaurant. And while they were eating, he performed just for her one of the most amazing magic tricks in history. And she's being interviewed, and she's recounting it. And remembering it is reducing her to tears.
Oh, my gosh.
She said it's the most amazing thing that's ever happened to her in her life, and that it was clearly meant for me. I won't give away the trick, because once you see the documentary, it is literally impossible to conceive how anyone, once we're done, I'm going to tell Patrick about the trick.
Spoilers.
But again, I can't recommend Deceptive Practice enough.
Cool. Wow. While we're talking about things that are available on streaming.
I know what you saw today.
You do. Yeah, and I'll get to that in a second. It's not as good as the Ricky Jay movie. I want to just mention real quick that Upstream Color, a movie we talked about a few weeks ago, is already available on Netflix streaming.
My,
Yeah, it came out on Blu-ray like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Hey!
Already on Netflix. So if you haven't seen it yet, you should definitely check out Upstream Color. There's a review of it on our site, fthismovie.net. We spoke about it a few weeks ago.
It's one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Yeah.
And somebody owes me $20.
Check it out. I saw two movies that I'll mention because I'm not going to talk about the 8 things I've seen for Junesploitation. I tried to see some non-Junesploitation stuff to talk about on the podcast.
Very wise.
Thank you, thank you. I saw a documentary on Netflix called The Revisionaries, and it's kind of a horror film if you believe in science or education. It's just about the Texas School Board of Education attempting to change all of the language in textbooks to reflect. It starts out at reflecting creationism versus evolution. It gradually segues into social science, and at one point they're advocating getting rid of the term hip-hop in one sentence and replacing it with country music. There's no argument for why they should do that, just let's get rid of hip-hop and replace it with country music.
Well, that seems arbitrary, but the creationism thing I think you can see,
yes.
Because that's God's truth.
Snake in a tree.
And you want that to be, you want children to learn that.
Like a lot of, I wouldn't say it's a great documentary, but it's definitely worth seeing, especially if you want to be sent into a rage.
Was it made by good-hearted, God-fearing documentaries?
It was made by, I don't know who it was made by. But like a lot of good documentaries, it gradually gains focus. And a few months ago, I talked about a movie called Clean Flicks, which starts out as this Mormon thing where they recut movies and it slowly focuses in on one guy. And this movie kind of does the same thing. I won't say there's the same kind of controversy as there was in Clean Flicks, but it's very interesting the way that it slowly becomes about this one guy who almost everyone in the movie recognizes, even sort of the very conservative religious right who are interviewed in the movie. They sort of recognize this guy, I think, is a dummy. He's running around saying, like, the Earth is 10,000 years old, and of course man lived side by side with dinosaurs. But it slowly stops being...
Note to F this movie listeners, according to the scientists, neither of those statements is true.
And he just keeps saying things like, because we don't know, but yes, we do.
Yeah, we do.
We have these skeletons, and we can say how old they are.
If you would take the time to find out, you don't know.
Right.
Most of the rest of us do.
It seems to slowly stop being about his beliefs and just becomes about him being the show, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. It's worth checking out. And then today, I went to a theater to see Epic with my 4-year-old son. We don't go to many movies, he and I, because he's just now starting to be in an age where he can sort of handle it. So I know there's, you know, one or two computer animated movies that come out a month. I tend to ignore all of them. I knew nothing about Epic going in, except that it was about little leaf people. It is about little leaf people. It's fine. I mean, it held his interest enough. It held my interest. It's sort of an adventure movie. And that's great. But watching it, the movie is fine. I don't have anything bad to say about the movie, except that it's weirdly sort of cynically constructed in the way that it focuses on a young girl whose mom is dead, because we've seen every Disney movie, so she's being raised by her absentee single dad. And
that
she,
trope now just goes without saying.
She dreams of a better life. Great, you got the young girls. There's adventure and little leaf men with arrows who fly on birds. Great, you got the boys. And then there's funny talking animals. And then there's a Beyonce song on the soundtrack to maybe get an Oscar nomination. It checks all the boxes.
And the funny animals are voiced by recognizable...
Everybody in the movie now is recognized, but these funny animals are Chris O'Dowd from Bridesmaids and Aziz Ansari.
Right, because now I'm remembering the trailer.
Yes. And to the movie's credit, there's not a ton of funny animals. Every once in a while, it kind of checks back in. It's not like the movie stops cold every 10 seconds for, like, a snail to say, "Who let the dogs out?" And we all laugh. Because the trailers that they show before are just a night. Rio 2 is like, what is this? And why are my kids supposed to like this? It's
I've
obnoxious.
Talked about this before, that even when you go see something good, for instance, Paranorman, you are subjected to this parade because it's a kids' movie but and they want to sell.
Even before Star Trek, they're showing kids' movie trailers.
For a long time, they all had farting animals.
Yeah.
Because that's an easy way to get a laugh.
Well, I remember Puss in Boots, I think, was the one that really sent you into a frenzy. And it's also interesting to see all these different animation houses sort of try and carve out their own identity. It used to be there was Pixar, and then there was everything that wasn't Pixar.
That's right.
And, I mean, I tend to still feel that way, but they make a big deal out of how this movie is from Blue Sky, which is like the Fox Animation Studio. So they brought us the Ice Age movies. That, to me, is not a hallmark of quality.
I still remember when A Bug's Life came out, which I still like a great deal. And I'm surprised they haven't done a sequel to that one. But around the same time, Ants
from DreamWorks Animation.
And Ants was really ugly and off-putting.
Yeah.
And it was very much an example of what you just said, that there's Pixar, and then there's the movie that Grandma buys you from Christmas for Christmas because she thought it was Pixar.
It's got the cute little cartoon bugs.
It's the one with the bugs.
Kids love Woody Allen.
You wanted the bug movie.
And his little personality in animated form.
But I could barely sit through that because it was...
I saw it. I don't remember it.
Only thing I remember is how disgusting the characters were designed.
Yeah, definitely. Non-Pixar has gotten better.
Yes.
So now every once in a while you can see a non-Pixar movie and think, hey, that was not so bad. How to Train Your Dragon, I think, stands out. At the same time that Pixar is getting a little worse. They're slipping.
Well,
I haven't seen Brave yet.
I would suggest... they're not so much slipping as expanding the brand with all of this nonsense.
Sequels.
Today I was at the Printer's Row Book Fair downtown, which was plastered with posters for this film called Planes.
Yes.
That's coming out this fall.
Yes.
And, oh, okay, so the cars have grown wings now.
Planes has been around for over 2 years, because we first heard about it, and my son was 2, and obsessed with airplanes, and obsessed with the movie Cars, and we thought, perfect, and then we find out it's not coming out for 2 years. Well, he's not going to care by that point. Luckily, he still does. It was going to go straight to DVD. No, let's put it out into theaters. So they're kind of dumping it in August after Monsters University has made all its money. But there was a giant cardboard stand-up in the theater as we walked in, and my son stops. What's that? Because he's seen the trailer for Planes every time he watches Cars 2 on Blu-ray. And he loves the trailer. So Planes is in his mind. We go in, we're watching, we're seeing Epic. We're about two-thirds of the way through. He turns to me and says, Daddy. Yes? Is the Planes movie going to be on when this is over? I said, no, son, we have to wait till August for the Planes movie.
By any chance, did he see the enormous turbo in the lobby? Was he at all interested in that?
Not so much. We saw that trailer, and I think...
You know the big plastic light-up thing I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The other day, I had Jan take my picture, and I'm actually on Turbo. I'm riding Turbo.
Sweet.
I managed to do it without actually literally touching it, because I was afraid I would break it. But watch the Twitter. I might send that out on Twitter soon.
I think, at JBF, this movie. I think he may want to see Turbo because it's about racing and he's, again, you can just think it's cars, but we came in and that trailer came on and I think he was a little freaked out because it was really loud. He's not big on loud, but that trailer was incredibly loud and had all the stupid jokes that I was talking about. Gosh, I know you're excited to talk about VHS 2, so let's stop putting it off with all this cartoon nonsense, literally, and let's talk about VHS The Deuce.
The Deuce is a good way of putting it. As we often do, especially for a new film, we have cleverly withheld our opinions of it from each other.
Yes, although I did not have a hard time figuring out what your opinion is.
Yeah, I have no poker face. So, Patrick?
Yes.
What did you think of it?
In some ways, I think VHS 2 is better than VHS 1.
Well, you are now going to have to spend 36 minutes explaining that to me.
Okay.
Because one of the few things I was looking forward to
yes.
was, before school let out, I had a bunch of students who are really into this, tell me VHS 2 is coming to the Music Box for a Midnight Show, and you have to go see it because the buzz is good.
Yes.
It's supposed to be better.
Yes.
Because I was not a fan of the first one.
Right.
So I thought, well, they're setting their sights pretty low, but it wouldn't be that hard to be better than VHS.
Yes.
And I actually thought VHS 2 was worse.
Okay. And in some ways, I agree with you.
So this is, okay, now we have something to talk about.
Yeah. You were not a fan of VHS, but we had, like, a good, spirited discussion for an hour. And by the end of it, you kind of said, like, well, there are things to talk about in that movie.
In the first one, here I'm referring to the first one.
Right.
I thought, you know, you want to start out like gangbusters. So except for the frame story, which I found kind of offensive, that first story about the girl.
Yeah.
I thought that was the best thing in the entire movie.
Me too.
And I can see why you want to start with that, because that's important, but that leaves you nothing at the end. And they end with the sort of haunted house segment, which I thought they put last, because that had all of the special effects in it.
Right.
VHS 2 made me long for those two segments in the first VHS.
Okay. The thing that I liked better about the first VHS, I thought it was an uglier movie, both aesthetically and sort of what it had to say about the state of the world right now.
Yes.
But I thought it was more of a piece in that sense, that while all these movies, while all these shorts sort of had nothing to do with one another, there was this cumulative result where you felt like, ah, this expresses a worldview.
They were unified by the fact that they think life sucks.
Yeah.
And we exist to die in horrible ways.
Yeah.
And that is how you die. And that's true, although it made me want to take a shower after I saw the movie. You're right.
I don't think this movie does that.
No.
These are totally unrelated.
And as much as I hated the frame of VHS,
yeah,
I thought it was actually better than the frame of VHS 2.
Well, they sort of repeat it, which I thought was odd, and there's these weird callbacks to the first movie.
Well, they repeat the thing that we are, I don't think this is a spoiler, we're put in a room with a lot of VHS tapes.
Which makes, and people are watching them.
Because that's a thing.
I don't understand why we couldn't just cut from one segment to another. Like, why we even need the frame story, to me, doesn't make sense.
Someone is a fan of Creepshow, and they think that you need a frame. As offensive and ugly as I thought VHS's frame story was, at least it had the power to upset me.
And sort of pulled together some of the things that we were talking about in the first, a lot of what the first movie had to say was contained in that.
These are perfect for these guys,
right.
Because look what they've been doing. I'm at a loss for words. One thing I noticed, and my lovely wife noticed too, to show you where VHS 2's mind really is, I can't remember a film that shows us breasts faster.
Yeah.
And I noted the time on the little thing. It's 1 minute in.
I think that was deliberate and kind of a joke.
Okay, because later, toward the end of the film,
happy now, we got this out of the way.
Right, because the rest of the film is largely...
Yes, although there is another...
With one exception. At the end, there's some almost subliminal...
Yes.
And I thought that was that VHS, because I remember VHS, that the tape would be taped over and over and over, and this was the vestige of something else.
Yes.
In any case, if it was a joke and a tip of the hat, then congratulations, because I really thought it came across as...
Yeah, I thought it was deliberately sort of brazen. Like, here you go.
Maybe even more so than the first VHS.
Yes.
I thought VHS 2 was made by 12-year-olds for 12-year-olds. I thought VHS was made by 15-year-olds for 15-year-olds.
Again, the structure of the movie is such that they give each of these sort of younger, up-and-coming indie filmmakers a little bit of money and go off and shoot your movie, and then we'll string them all together.
A very little bit of money.
Yeah.
From the evidence.
And in the first movie, again, they're strung together and they sort of comment on one another. I don't think they do in this movie, and that's why it felt less cohesive to me. At the same time, I think overall, the individual segments were better.
And that's where I'm going to disagree with
you. Okay. I thought in the first movie we had that great one with the girl, which I'm still a big fan of.
Yeah.
Last one with the ghosts was okay. Everything else I thought was pretty bad to terrible. This one, we have one less segment, which is nice because it's shorter.
Yes.
So there's four this time.
I got it right. I have little notes here, and I didn't watch the end credits, so I've given them my own name.
Yeah, well, let's be careful what we call the third one. I feel like what I want to call the third one is a spoiler. So the others I feel like we can call ghost, zombies, blank, aliens. Right?
Okay, can I use this word?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, so ghost, zombies, cult,
yeah,
aliens.
Yes.
Okay, because it was only in retrospect that the part of the third segment that you're talking about,
yes,
it was only much later that I thought, oh, they think that's the twist. That's like a twist.
Sure.
Anyway.
I didn't think Ghost was very good, and that was directed by Adam Wingard, who made, I think he did the wraparound for the first movie. And
so this is a promotion.
He has a segment in ABCs of Death, which I really didn't like.
The segment that Patrick's talking about that he's calling Ghost, I have named Bionic Eye.
Yeah.
And it's proof that this series has this mania,
yes,
for where is the camera. So in the first one, we get the glasses. Someone has glasses that's a camera. And this one goes at one better because this guy's in a car accident and they give him an eye that's a video camera. This reaches its crazy fruition in the fourth segment, where it's like strapped to a dog's head or something.
Yes.
It's attached to a dog.
Yes.
It's dog vision. Or like the naked female breasts at the beginning of it. Is this the filmmakers having fun with what has now become a trope?
I think a little
of the VHS series.
I think,
where is the camera? Because you see them doing it in the second segment too.
Yeah, I think because now this is a thing, you know, this series could ostensibly just keep going on because you find four guys, you give them a little bit of money, you say, go shoot a movie.
Oh my God.
The problem is that all of them feel this need to, how do I distinguish myself in terms of, how do we explain why this is being shot? It can't just be a guy holding a camcorder.
And
so how is this different?
And it's possible to be clever because one of the segments that I had some respect for in the original VHS, I don't think it came to anything, but at least it was an attempt to go in a different direction, was the Skype segment.
Yes.
Which I thought sort of came across as a mediocre Twilight Zone episode, but at least there was an attempt,
right,
to... Oh, the dog is strapped to... The dog is again, strapped the to... The Skype, camera is strapped to a dog's
the
head.
Skype thing breaks down, as all of these do, as soon as you say, why is there a Skype conversation, which is 2012, on a format that hasn't been around since the early 90s? Like, why is someone converting a Skype conversation to a VHS tape?
And the minute you suspend your disbelief and say, okay, he's got an eyeball that's fake, and it's feeding something and everyone can see what he's seeing, then you run into trouble because did they also give him a bionic ear? Because I'm hearing what's going on too.
Right.
And he doesn't blink enough. And there are cuts. So much like The Purge, it pretty much instantly breaks down.
Well, again, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole of like trying to explore the logic of VHS.
Yeah, all I'm saying is you either abandon the trope.
Yeah.
Or you come up with better ones.
Well, it seems like all of the tapes have been edited, which, okay, I'll go with it. And is there this attempt to explain who the person is editing them and converting them to VHS and then stacking them up in a house so that someone could watch it and then bad things happen? I mean, there's like...
Because in this one...
There's sort of a mythology.
And this isn't a spoiler. At pretty near the beginning... The mysterious man on the laptop sort of admits that he collects these, mm-hmm, and that there's one that he just purchased, mm-hmm, and he says something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's their half-hearted attempt to say...
Are we talking about the guy in the hat or the old man? Or older man?
I'm not sure if it's a hat or a hoodie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, that's the guy.
But he's the guy who figures...
But there's an older man near the beginning who's on a screen. That's the guy from the first movie, right?
Yes.
Okay. Again, I don't know why they feel the need to tie them together.
So they're trying for a Saw-like thing, yeah, where in VHS 3,
Yeah.
You know what would be funny in VHS 3? If a little character that looks like a VHS tape came riding out on a little bicycle. Hi, I'm VHS-y.
So it's this weird thing that people are definitely liking VHS 2 better.
Why?
I don't know. It's like...
Because that's what I heard.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Oh, it's better.
I think in some ways it is. I do think some of the individual... the overall quality control of the individual segments is better. I think 3 of the 4 are okay. I think 1 is good.
Okay.
I think Ghost's Adam Wingard's segment, I don't think works. I think what it's asking us to buy, which is he gets a bionic eye and then he starts seeing ghosts,
right,
is such an old, like... Oh, they gave me the hands of a serial killer. I mean, it's been done so many times.
But ironically, while I agree with you, that one had some good booze in it.
Sure.
One particularly was very well done.
Yeah.
And I didn't see that in the other segments as much. So I'll give you that.
He meets a girl who's deaf. Who was deaf, and she can hear the ghosts. And then there's another, there's a spoiler there, but that's the other instance to me of nudity that is either
it's
the clumsiest, worst thing ever, or another joke.
It's
like,
way gratuitous. I wanted a second girl to show up.
Yes.
Who had an accident with her mouth.
And she can taste the ghost.
She can taste the ghost. I thought that would have been
because
good.
Then it could have been called Taste the Ghost. that to me, that segment builds to a moment that is supposed to be like, I can't watch this, and then it gets thrown away. I thought the whole thing was building to one specific moment.
And I agree.
It gets thrown away. So now it doesn't justify its existence.
And I was thinking, I can watch this.
Yeah.
And I did watch it.
As did I.
And I didn't think it was particularly well done.
It wasn't. That's what I'm saying.
When you consider what's being shown, we're doing a marvelous job of not engaging
in
spoilers.
We're so sorry.
That is a hallmark of movie moments that people can't take.
Yes.
I'm not even going to say it.
Right.
And exactly right. You're exactly right. It's thrown away.
Had it really been the thing that it needed to be... We would have said, oh, well, that segment wasn't good, but boy, it gets to that moment, and it makes the whole thing pay off.
Yeah.
And it doesn't.
No.
So then we move into zombies, right?
Which I thought was the weakest of the four. And I thought, interestingly enough, it reminded me of a segment in, I call segment 2 Zombie Vision.
Yeah.
It reminded me of a segment in the first VHS where it harkens back to high school kids who... make a film out in the Forest Preserve.
Yeah.
It's the Forest Preserve film.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a kind of ridiculous premise. It didn't go anywhere. I will give them this, though. There is a moment that actually made me laugh out loud. The birthday party.
Okay.
And I thought, well, I will give them this. Children are not killed. I have a problem with that. Given the nature of this series, you could easily see that going a different way.
Yeah.
There was also a line at the beginning of the Zombie Vision segment that made me kind of sit back and either feel old. You're younger than me.
Okay.
A young man is going out for a bike ride.
Right.
For some reason...
He's going to film it.
He has a video camera on the handlebars filming him and a funny-looking helmet. That makes him look like an idiot.
Yes.
With a camcorder on top. So, yodi-dodi-do. And just before he sets out on this delightful bike ride, his girlfriend calls him on the phone and wants to know where he is because he should be in bed. And her line is, all you do is ride that bike. Why don't you ride me?
Yeah.
And I said, no one says that.
Correct.
No one has ever said that ever to any bicycle enthusiast or anyone. And this is an example of young filmmakers not even having a handle on their own generation.
Sure. I wonder if some of the problem is the speed at which they turn these around. That this feels like it was shot in the span of a day. And it's like, well, we have some dialogue, so let's not pay attention to... what it is that no thought seems to have gone into what the people say.
And I think I cut you off. You were going to say something about the Zombie Vision segment.
It's directed by, Greg Hale. Yes. And co-directed by Eduardo Sanchez.
Which I noticed in the end credits.
Yeah, of the Blair Witch Project.
Yes.
So here's the guy who sort of invented found footage
how
horror.
How the mighty have fallen.
And now he's contributing a segment. So on that level, I thought it was sort of interesting. Let's see this guy go back to doing this thing, this genre that he sort of helped create. And I thought that the idea of a first-person zombie was sort of novel. And then it breaks down after that. So it's like, okay, you've got this premise, now what? And the problem is there is no now what. And I thought, and this isn't fair, because maybe this segment's goal was not to be scary, but as soon as we are first-person zombie, it can't be scary, right? The scary thing is the zombie wants to kill me.
Right.
If I'm the zombie, what's scary?
And another thing I was thinking when I watched this fine film was that, and maybe what you just said accounts for it, that these were made incredibly fast. Every segment, it seems, is allowed to have one idea.
Yeah.
It's his eye.
Yeah.
He can see the dead.
Yeah.
Go.
Right.
The zombie has the camera on his head.
Right.
In a me, that's all, folks.
Right. It smacks of everybody sits down and they try to come up with, okay, what's going to be the thing that's different about mine? And they come up with one and then they shoot it. It's how does he have the camera and what are we inverting, you know?
There is a paucity of ideas.
And the first movie sort of did that same thing where the kids go in the woods and the girl's trying to track down the murderer who terrorized her, and he's this weird tracking thing.
Yeah, he's a tracking error.
And it's
VHS.
A neat idea.
Yeah.
And then nothing.
And that's all. It's one idea per segment, folks.
Right.
This is a horror movie for people who don't like to think.
So, Zombies was watchable and felt pretty short, but
it does have that going for it.
But it's just a series of, look over there, now I'm going to eat this person. And, it's like, how quickly can a zombie outbreak happen? Okay, great, and we're moving on.
Again, scraping the bottom of the barrel to find something nice to say.
Yeah.
If you can't say something
Which I'm
nice,
trying
don't
to
say
do.
Anything at all.
That's how you have a conversation.
And Patrick and I have seen a lot of zombie movies. This one adds a trope that after you're bitten, before you die, before you turn, you have this explosive black vomit.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting visually.
Sure. Yeah.
And served as a wonderful marker, because once we see
right.
it for the first time,
right.
it, oh, okay,
right.
I see.
Right. Then we move into the third segment, which to me was the best.
Yes, I would agree. I'm calling it Cult.
Yeah, directed by Gareth Evans, who directed The Raid, Redemption.
Oh, that makes me like it a lot more.
Look at that.
I will say the segment we're about to discuss was certainly more ambitious than the other three put together.
Yeah. This one I feel like we can talk about the least in non-spoilers.
Right.
It was the longest, I think.
It is.
And continued to build and build and showed us some crazy things and gets crazier and crazier as it goes along. And again, that's what you need to do, because all these other segments, here's the idea, and then we play it out for 10 minutes, maybe, and then we end. And there's no punchline, and there's no momentum. It's just this one, like we said, this one idea sort of explored for 10 minutes. And this one, at least, starts one place and ends in a very different place. And I thought it was very effective.
And
I thought this one was really good.
I think I can say this without spoiling it. I didn't think it was good.
Okay.
I thought it was better
okay.
than the other three. Once again, you have this trope where we have two people with button cameras.
Right.
The button on their blouse is a camera, plus it's a TV crew filming a documentary, so you have those cameras. At other times, we're looking at security cameras in the compound, so I thought that at least gave them the ability
right.
to not just stick
to almost forget
with a camera on
exactly.
a zombie's head. I will grant you this. At the end, it takes a series of turns.
Yes.
And one of them, at this point, so Patrick knows what I'm talking about, I'm going to act something out. You will not be able to hear it.
We'll get to spoilers very soon.
You make noise so okay. that it covers what I'm doing.
Yes, I'm making noise. Yeah, okay, I got it.
Okay?
Yeah.
That
yeah,
thing?
Yeah.
That? Ooh. Yeah. That,
yeah. Yeah.
But I didn't think that alone.
I thought that, in addition to a number of other things, made the segment pretty good. I thought it was very well directed, and again, Bevan has established himself as a very good director.
And I will say this, when they get to the compound, one of the little girls says something that's obviously intended as foreshadowing, mm-hmm. but I thought that worked really well.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't finish her sentence.
Right.
And it was almost Lynchian, and, oh, she can't mean that, can she?
Yeah.
And I like that.
And there's one crazy thing that you see in this segment that you don't see anywhere else. It involves, I can't really say, it's the, where the person goes up the,
yeah,
and it's not called attention to, it never happens again, it's not established as like, this is a thing, it's just this little throwaway thing that's like, well, that's terrifying.
To compare it to something you may have seen, in the Joe Dante film Piranha,
yes.
when they get to the secret government lab,
yes.
there's a couple seconds of stop motion animation.
Yes.
It's this little...
Right.
Doo, 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 doo.
Right.
Now notice, in VHS2, it is not a little creature, and it's not... Da, 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 no. da, da, but it's a similar little...
Right.
And I thought that was going to go somewhere.
Right.
And it doesn't, and applause for that.
Exactly. I mean, you have to give it credit for just, here's this other scary
right.
thing.
The overarching effect is, oh, there's a whole bunch of crazy shit going on there.
Yes, and I thought that this segment did a better job of combining real kind of old school horror movie kind of scares with that thing from the first movie, which is the world is a horrible place and you're going to die. That there's some of that that's just straight up murder, but then there's also...
Right, because when it started, I thought, okay, I can see where this is going. This is sort of Jim Jones in
right.
Jonestown.
Right.
And it really doesn't. Although, again, to give credit where credit is due, early on we see some security cam footage. And the cult leader is doing something very interesting behind his desk
yeah.
before the crew gets there.
Yeah.
And I think a lesser film would have underlined it or maybe would have zoomed into that segment on the screen. And it's just sort of there.
Yeah.
For you to take in, that I thought was really good too.
I think where I come away with not a bad taste, but it builds to a fever pitch, but the punchline is much smaller and much more sort of subdued and possibly even silly. I think a lot of people seeing this will be sort of put through the ringer, and then the last image feels silly.
Okay, this is the opposite of what happened with Adam. When we did Evil Dead, where
okay.
for an hour we pummeled him
yeah.
and into submission and got him to admit that it wasn't good. I think you're doing the opposite here. And I think because I rented it on demand in HD, I had a 48-hour window.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have 48 hours to watch it again. This actually makes me want to go back and watch the cult segment again because I almost forgot. That segment ends with a line that I thought was amazing. And my wife misheard it.
Okay.
And I said, no. He said this.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about.
I think so, but we'll get to spoilers.
And I thought that was something.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
So perhaps the movie should have been structured differently because I actually think this should have been last.
Oh, you bet.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they were thinking.
Because instead we go into Jason Eisner's Alien Sleepover, and Jason Eisner again did a segment in ABCs of Death, which you haven't seen.
No.
So you can't really shit on VHS2, although who knows, maybe you would see ABCs of Death.
So ABCs of Death is worse.
I think so, but maybe you would see it and say like, well, there's enough crazy ideas that it's okay.
Well, I hardly ever say that.
Because there's 26 of them.
I'm giving myself credit. I did not watch the end credits. I have titled the fourth segment Slumber Party Alien.
I think the official name, I'll have it for you in 1 second, is Alien Abduction Slumber Party. So there you go. So this is a bunch of kids having this fun sleepover where they're tormenting the sister and the boyfriend, and then aliens show up.
And to show you how awful this segment is mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, and how poorly conceived and directed, it was very unclear to me until about halfway through it that this was all taking place in one night.
Mm-hmm.
The way the pranks are set up,
mm-hmm.
you thought this is a byplay that's gone on for weeks.
Right.
And then you, boy, a lot happened in that night.
Yeah. And the dog cam, I think, is almost explained. I mean, it is explained how the dog got the camera, but then if I'm not mistaken, the dog keeps the camera for the rest once things go crazy,
right? Well, they
right?
send the dog in to right. photograph something they really don't want to get close to.
Right. And then the dog has the camera for the rest of the segment.
Which, of course, leads to an image at the end that I think is... I don't think the film earns it.
I agree with you 100%.
You know what I'm talking about.
And Is it... I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking
about. I'm doing hand puppets
and
now.
I had the same... We're going to get into spoilers in 1 second. So okay. You didn't like this one. I thought this one was a little bit better than... You, I wouldn't say I liked it, but I thought there were some effective, like, that's scary, the way that the aliens are sometimes shot and not pop out of nowhere, but it's like you can't escape them.
I thought the noise
yeah.
that heralded them was yeah. good. I think early on, someone dives off the pier,
mm-hmm.
and we see one in the water mm-hmm. for a second, mm-hmm. which I thought was effective, but... To me, it was a game, and to the extent that they played it well for a while, I would give them credit. The alien suits are ridiculous looking.
Yeah.
And they only work from far away with very bright light behind them and in very short doses. And for most of it, they manage to keep them off screen because
yeah.
the minute they're on screen for longer than 3 seconds, it looks like a dopey costume party.
You talked about the underwater. Maybe I'm remembering this wrong. I seem to remember it as a kid's like in a sleeping bag. And then the next thing
that's later.
Okay.
I actually thought
I thought that was really effective.
Because the dog's in the sleeping bag,
that's
too.
Right,
when they grab the sleeping bag and suddenly it's clearly submerged,
yeah.
I thought that was frightening.
Yeah. My big problem, besides the last image, which again, I can't tell if that's this guy, Jason Eisner, thinking this is effective or if this is him literally calling attention to... Look at how obvious I'm being in how I'm trying to manipulate your emotions. I don't know how much of the movie is aware of or is a commentary on the things that we're objecting to, or if it's literally just using the things that we're objecting to. Does that make sense?
And oddly enough, this goes back to a discussion earlier in the summer about The Hangover, that if the film had approached it differently and was funny,
mm-hmm.
we would accept some things mm-hmm. that because the film is not clever or sure-footed or funny, just come across as glaringly horrible.
Yeah.
Especially because in the narrative of The Hangover, later on, characters like talk about it. We've mm-hmm. talked about this on the comment section. The Brad Cooper character is like, big deal, it was a giraffe.
Right.
Well, yeah. So if you're going to kill one, could you do it funny?
Right. Yeah.
Maybe a joke about the neck.
So we get to the last image, which we'll talk about in spoilers in a minute. But my big problem with Alien Sleepover Party is the same problem that I had with some of Cult, and maybe that's it. That, unfortunately, what happens with the aesthetic that they're using and with the approach that they've taken, which is this is a person filming this, that both of them incorporate chaos as sort of this trope that people are running away from things and things are popping out. And the way that they communicate that is the camera gets shaken a lot, which is hard to watch visually, but also to a point where the image breaks up, the sound cuts out. And that happens all throughout Alien Slumber Party to the point where you almost can't follow what's going on. That it's just this constant state of the image breaking up because someone's shaking the camera and running away from something. And I thought that hurt the movie.
And if Cloverfield, in a movie theater, made people sick to the point where they had to have a little printed card at the ticket office, I cannot imagine watching this movie in a theater.
I agree.
The people going to the Music Box in July... You might want to take some Dramamine. I mean, it was making me sick at home on my TV.
Yeah, I thought the Cult segment did some of it, but showed enough restraint that it was okay. But I thought
the Slumber Party Aliens is just crazy.
You can't make sense of anything, that it's just that's the only aesthetic. And then we get to the wraparound again. And we'll talk about that in a second, but I thought that showed me at least one image that I thought was disturbing.
I know exactly the one you're talking about.
But then they went back to it, and then it became silly.
Right. Because it's almost like they show it effectively,
yeah,
and then later it's like they turn on the lights, yeah, right, in the room, right, and it's like, oh, the making of, the guy in a mask. Oh, that's, yeah, what, right, it looked like without the cool lighting, yeah, and the editing. Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. Okay, so let's talk about VHS 2 in spoilers. See it if you want, whatever. We've just spent an hour talking about it with no spoilers, so.
Don't see it.
I don't know.
I honestly don't think there's enough to recommend it.
I thought the first one was actually worth seeing more just because of the way that I thought it captured a weird point of view that we're at.
And one of my final thoughts, and I'll admit, the older I get, it takes me longer and longer and longer to digest things, yeah, and come to a conclusion. I can't, yeah, immediately. One of the things VHS 2 did was make me appreciate VHS more.
Yeah, that VHS, while VHS I feel like was sort of about something, I don't think VHS 2 is. I think it's more just about a visceral experience, and your mileage may vary.
Which, oddly enough, is what I thought about The Purge, that this is a movie for young people who don't particularly want any sort of deep meditation on anything. It's a haunted house, and it's an hour and a half of thrills, and you go, and you scream, and then it's over.
And that's, I guess, kind of what VHS 2 is. Spoilers for VHS 2 coming up, because what you just described, I thought, cult segment, which, now that we're in spoilers, I wanted to call Demon, did the best. I thought, if you're going to do a crazy haunted house, Demon did it really well.
Because of what was happening in the haunted house, because as we already said, there's a whole bunch of,
yeah,
shit storm going, yeah, on. But the minute... Okay, we're in spoilers,
yeah,
now. A woman gives birth.
Right.
Which, in the reality of the film, seems improbable.
Right.
Because at the beginning of the film, she's only a couple months pregnant.
Right.
So maybe this place, this... What is it? The Gate of Paradise?
Right.
There's a name. Well,
and they know she's pregnant right when she comes in,
oh,
and,
yeah,
basically say that you're going to give birth.
You're going to give birth to something special.
Yeah, right.
And what comes out of her is not a baby.
Right.
And is something from a Guillermo del Toro film.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a really impressive special effect.
Yeah.
Which I thought was made better. This is the last line that we were talking about. This crazy pan-like demon chases this guy,
mm-hmm,
and eventually corners him.
Mm-hmm.
Does it?
He's in a car that flips.
Slips the car.
He's climbing out.
He's,
and it comes out from above him.
Right. And the demon says,
$2. No, what does the demon say?
He says something like, "Daddy."
That sounds right. Yeah.
And he is.
Right.
The guy is.
Because that's a conflict that's been going on. Right.
That he is the...
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, that's...
Yeah.
Right? And I also really like there's liquid coming out of every orifice of that guy after the car crash.
It's quite a performance.
There's stuff coming out of his mouth. There's stuff coming out of his nose. And I'm thinking, I have a feeling that's what it would really look like if you just went through that in a car.
And they show the demon, and this is where I say that it could be silly to some audiences because... It's a hard time. You know, that's one of those things where it's easy for us to say, but as soon as you try and make that literal by showing it...
I give them so much credit. It's that it's that Clive Barker thing from Fear in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason you show it.
Right.
That's why I come to see these movies,
right,
to see it. You have to show it to me.
I think it could get a negative reaction because it does look a little bit like a guy in a suit. To me, what sells it is then when the wings come out.
Yeah.
Which is a nice little, okay, now we're going to shoot, because we already saw it once. So seeing it again isn't as scary, especially in the broad daylight. To have the wings come out, to me, puts it over.
This is making me like the cult segment much more.
Yeah.
But I still don't know if I'd recommend the whole film.
I don't blame you for not recommending the whole film, because again, I think it's uneven. I do think the cult segment is good. I think Zombie is okay. I think... Alien Slumber Party is okay.
I thought the zombie vision segment was the laziest.
Yeah.
Also, in the spirit of spoiler alert, because the camera is somehow attached to the dog's head, The last image in that segment is a dead dog.
Mm-hmm.
The dog.
A dying dog. It's not even a dead dog.
And again, like the decapitated giraffe in The Hangover, you have to earn that.
Right, and what I was trying to say is, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, Jason Eisner, he made Hobo with a Shotgun, which is what it is, and then he did that segment in ABCs of Death. So I don't want to give Jason Eisner too much credit without really knowing who he is as a filmmaker, but I don't think the obvious manipulation of that final image was lost on him. That it's the most pathetic, sad, horrible thing to see this sad dog's face dying. I thought the shot leading up to it was really cool, that it's this long point of view kind of fall. And while I was kind of marveling at that shot, then the dog's face comes into frame and I just think, fuck you.
And I'm not Mr. Bleeding Heart PETA guy. I'm not. It just came across as superfluous. Although us discussing it right now reminded me that in the zombie vision segment, the zombie gets decapitated.
Yeah.
And we get a similar zombie head POV.
Yeah.
Which
well, the camera lands next to his body, right? There's a lot of head trauma in this movie. There's that one shotgun blast in Cult One that's like, oh my God, that is.
And the other thing I wanted to bring up was there might be an audience for this film because in almost every segment, there's one standalone moment that seems to be the special effects showcase. And in the Cult One.
Yeah, it's the guy exploding, right?
No,
oh.
I thought in the Cult One, it's when the cult leader cuts that guy's throat, the cameraman, down on the ground.
Yeah.
And I'm not a connoisseur of these things, but it's one of the most realistic ones I've ever seen in that it's not obvious where it doesn't look like they've built up his neck or that it's his head with a fake body.
Sure.
I think part of it might even be digital. It's incredibly realistic.
I think they actually killed a guy. I think that's...
Well, that is reason alone.
I thought the guy exploding was pretty effective. I thought the line of guys shooting themselves in the head was effective. The little person climbing up the wall that is never mentioned is like, what the fuck was that?
Scamper.
And that's right before the guy explodes, if memory serves. So you can't even process, like, wait, what did I just see? Because we're already on to the next crazy thing.
This is making me like the cult segment even better. Rent it on pay-per-view. Zip forward.
Yeah.
Until you see an Asian man talking.
Yeah.
Watch that segment. And then go have a nice dinner.
And with that wraparound, which, again, I would almost say I liked the wraparound better in this one than in the first one. But, again, I can't say that because in the first one, it feels of a piece with the whole weird, ugly movie. And in this one, it's just this other, it tries to tie the two together or whatever. But we were talking about when the guy tries to shoot himself in the face.
Yes.
And then fails to do that and instead is left with this horrible jaw injury.
Yeah, it's sort of.
To me, was sort of horrifying when he sort of sits back up and crawls out of frame because you're just thinking like, oh my God, he didn't die. Now he's just in horrible pain. But then a few seconds later, it's revealed he's just this weird supernatural zombie monster with a ridiculous rubber tongue that to me was reminding me of Beetlejuice when they spread the face in Beetlejuice.
They definitely show it too many times.
And it ruins the effect of that moment. To me, I was like, well, that justifies the thing, and then they kind of ruined it.
Would you say the film as a whole justifies renting it on pay-per-view or going to see the movie? Would you recommend the film?
No.
Okay. Neither would I. Good night, everybody.
I would recommend the film to a hardcore horror audience just for the opportunity to see four up-and-coming filmmakers make a short film.
Yes. And in that spirit, that midnight show in July at the Music Box, if you get 800 horror fans, they could have a good time with this. It makes me want to sit there, as if this was even possible anymore, and make my own VHS tape that had Crazy Girl, Cult, haunted house.
Yeah.
And that's the whole movie. No frame.
The problem, I think, is cult and haunted house are actually kind of similar in that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, both in the way that they go crazy and in the way that they present the threat of the possibility of danger that turns out to be like, yeah, that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
But they both have the same sort of reveal.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. We now return you to Junesploitation.
Yay!
And,
I like a movie show.
We will be back next week. VHS 2! We'll be right back.